Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for joining us. And this week, the first of occasional roundups of new music being written, performed, and recorded in Kentucky. Borrowing from the liner notes written by John Herod for the Don Rogers album you'll hear all about during this hour, quote, "The Kentucky music renaissance goes on in old and new directions all at once and seems to be evolving faster than people can understand it. There is so much new homegrown talent that it takes a while for people to hear all of it and then go back for repeated listening to really understand it. The ease and speed of transmission through all the new music platforms gives an indication of what's going on, but it doesn't tell us much about where it came from. But always there is more." End quote. And ever so often, quarterly, we think, we're going to tap into that flow and share what we discover with you. We have no fewer than 9 artists for you to check out this hour, beginning with 3 singer-songwriters whose musical storytelling captures life and times in the coal communities of eastern Kentucky. Matthew Wickstrom wrote about them in a recent Herald Leader article, and you can find Matt's article on our homepage at esweku.org. They include Eric Bolander, joining us from Lexington to talk about his music, the song Cold Men in particular, and what inspired it. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks again for having me. The inspiration of the song Cold Men was the situation with the Black Jewel Mining Company filing for bankruptcy, which I suppose isn't that unusual for a company, but they owed quite a bit of pay to the workers, and those workers were trying to get compensated, and there was a large load of coal that was on the railhead, and they went and camped out on the rail for a very long time. I know it was several weeks, if not a couple months, to out of protest for not getting their wages that were coming to them, even though they were getting ready to sell off this last load of coal that those folks worked for. And that just inspired me to sort of write a song based on, you know, the life of someone growing up in a family of coal miners and seeing their dad struggle, you know, from a situation like this.
And tell us about that title, Cold Men. What's that about?
So Cold, C-O-L-D, uh-huh. A lot of folks just hear it and think I'm saying cold, but right. Which makes sense. But it's really just about, you know, rich, wealthy men in power that just are cold. They're cold-blooded. They're cold when it comes to relationships with employees or relationships with, you know, other people that are in need. And I understand being a business owner and CEO, even of corporate businesses, can't be easy. And I get that. But the reference there is definitely for those that don't care, that don't lend a hand to folks and don't care about the people that are making them money.
And the song is from the perspective of a little girl. Why is that?
Well, I just thought about my daughter, you know. She just turned 5, and kind of combine that with the fact that I grew up, my dad was a union carpenter and construction worker, and we didn't have a whole lot of money, you know, and we didn't have an indoor bathroom until I was 4 or 5 years old, and we struggled till I got a little bit older, and my dad worked better jobs, and my mom stayed home with us kids and took care of us, which is a full-time job too, and I just kind of combined those ideas and thought, you know, what if my little girl was in this family and what if I was the coal miner that was, you know, a few months and now I'm not talking a couple of weeks. It was about 3 months worth of pay. Uh-huh. And we're not talking about, you know, the 1920s. We're talking about folks making decent money that's, you know, they've got car payments and insurance and phone and mortgages and, you know, all these expenses. And suddenly a couple, 3 months go down the road and you're trying to figure out where you're going to get money.
Eric, what in your view is the distinction between coal miners and the coal companies?
I will say this. I know there's some coal company owners out there that throughout history took care of their workers. They did right by them. They got good wages. I don't want to come off as if I'm, you know, putting down every single person that's ever owned a coal mine, because mm-hmm. I don't think that's fair. But I will say, I think the history will tell that there are plenty of people that didn't care about the employees, specifically with coal mines. And I think the coal miners themselves are just working hard. And sometimes those small towns, especially eastern Kentucky and in the mountains, there's not a lot going on as far as industry and places to work and make a living. and the coal mine's a great place to go. It's right there in your backyard, and they can make decent money. But, you know, at the same time, they've got folks not really looking out for their best interests.
Are you working on more music, and in particular, anything about these subjects?
So, yeah, Cold Men was one of four singles we've put out since summer of 2020. And those four songs will be released along with a full record, tentatively February of 2022. And that's the goal.
And how can people find your music?
I have a website. It's just ericbolander.com. I'm on all the socials and Spotify, all the streaming platforms as well.
That's singer-songwriter Eric Bolander talking to us from Lexington. Thank you so much, Eric.
Man, thank you so much.
Young girl full of dreams and aspirations. Sees her daddy full of pain. She wonders if the family seeks salvation.
With us now from Lexington is Cole Chaney. Cole's album Mercy recently surpassed 1 million streams on Spotify, and it includes songs about the coal industry and life in the coal fields of Kentucky. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Cole.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And first, if you could, tell us about your family's ties to the coal industry.
Well, my papa grew up in Johnson County, Kentucky in his early years, and That's what that song Coal Shooter talks about mainly is it's talking about his life as a young man growing up down there in a very poor household. And their ties to the coal industry were that his father had worked in the coal mines his entire life. And that's what he grew up seeing his father do. And his older brother, James, was also working with them. And he started working with them as a young man about 17 years old.
And for our listeners who are not sure what a coal shooter is, could you tell us about that?
Yeah. So just first off, disclaimer, I've had a bunch of folks ask me this question. I've never worked in a coal mine myself, you know, and I don't claim to, but I have all the respect in the world for the people that do. But to my knowledge, from what my papa has told me and from the research that I've done, the job of a coal shooter back then, I'm sure it's a lot safer now, but what they did is they would crawl back into what they would call a coal room. And they would crawl around these small, about 3 foot tall, if that, rooms. And they would drill holes in the sides of these rooms, and they would drop sticks of dynamite down there. And what they would do is they would stagger the lengths of these fuses so that they could go around the room and light them one at a time with a torch. And after they did that, you know, they just ran as fast as they could out of the mine. And there was a lot of young men that didn't make it out of there, and that's really what that song is about.
What was your grandfather's reaction when he heard the song?
He was very taken aback by it. He heard it before it was even finished, and we actually sat down and talked about it a lot, and he gave me some details that I didn't have, and that kind of helped me really finish the song because I'd had it for a long time, but I knew it wasn't done. Mm-hmm. So he helped me with the details that I was missing.
All right. Well, I mentioned that you'd had some pretty good success on Spotify for your album Mercy. Where besides Spotify can the album be found?
It can be found on just about any streaming service that you can think of.
All right.
I think it's on Apple Music. It's on YouTube Music, Amazon, all that good stuff. We have hard copies also.
Okay. And are you working on new music?
Yes, I am. We're, you know, I don't have anything out there that's ready to share with the world yet, but about the time that album got done, started writing for another one. So, yeah, we're working on stuff.
All right. That's singer-songwriter Cole Chaney talking with us from Lexington. We thank you very much, Cole.
Thank you.
Logan Halstead is with us now. He joins us from Vinton, Ohio, to talk about his music. Welcome, Logan.
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
Do I understand correctly that you're originally from Eastern Kentucky and that you and your family then relocated to West Virginia? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was born in Mount Sterling, Kentucky.
Oh, well, then, so was I.
Yeah, nice, nice. About when I was about three, we ended up moving down to Boone County, West Virginia, and that's where I grew up.
Well, tell us about your family's history in coal.
Well, my papa was a miner. My dad was a miner. My uncle was a miner. I've had a lot of family members, a lot of friends that all worked in the mines.
So you've written a song about it. It's called Dark Black Coal. Talk to us about the meaning and intent of this song.
I wrote that one with a miner's perspective and just kind of wanting to tell my children, you know, like coal isn't the only thing around. Because when I grew up as a kid, I mean, that's about the only thing a kid got to look forward to was growing up and working in the mines. So I'm just trying to, I guess, give some people some hope that there is more out there in the world.
Where can we find your music, Logan?
Right now, we just got YouTube videos out. We got some music coming out, hopefully around March. I should be out on Apple Music and Spotify and things like that. But just for now, I'm just posting to YouTube, trying to get some YouTube videos out and playing shows.
Okay. Will you be sure and get back to us and let us know when that music's coming out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Logan Halstead speaking with us from Vinton, Ohio. We appreciate your time, Logan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
And you miss being younger, boy with a hunger to get far away from this town. You never knew how, why, or when, just knew that you'd make it somehow. Now 20 years older, shoulder to shoulder, with boys who were just like you. Spending their lives underground, proving their collars are blue. Dark black coal, take my soul, owe it to you anyways. Just don't let my children become the victims of the mountains' evil ways. Dark black coal, take my soul, owe it to you anyways. Just don't let my children become the victims of the mountains' evil ways.
Heading over to Louisville now to catch up with a band that counts among its main influences John Coltrane, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Thelonious Monk, Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock, Count Basie, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, Esperanza Spalding, Kamasi Washington, John Batiste, and Robert Glasper. I'm talking about Kiana and the Sun Kings, and Kiana Dell joins us now. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Kiana.
Thank you for having me.
So how did the vision for this band come about? How did you pull this together?
Four of the core members met at Bellarmine University, myself included, and I actually had them playing for my senior recital, but the chemistry between us was so insane that I asked them if they wanted to start playing around town. And we got a regular gig playing some jazz standards at a club called Red Herring, which unfortunately is now closed. But that's the story.
Well, you definitely have your own sound. It doesn't fit neatly into any particular single category or genre. Maybe jazz fusion, there's some soul, R&B, blues in there as well. How did you shape all of those influences into a sound, or did it just happen?
That is a good question. I think it just happened. We definitely had influences we pulled from Herbie Hancock, Robert Glasper, Erykah Badu, and I think you can hear some of that influence in our sound, but we definitely bring our own backgrounds to the music every time we approach it.
And are you doing all original music?
Yes, we are.
Do you feel that you're carving out a space for yourselves?
I do. In some spaces I do, and in others I feel like we are following in the footsteps of those we've been influenced by.
Well, you have an EP. It's titled Chrysalis, and we picked out a track from it titled Cold. Let's listen here for a moment. So, Kiana, tell us about something that I know is a near and dear to your heart, Half Step House, it's called.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Half Step House was our attempt to create a safe space for musicians to come together. A really great way to learn how to perform and how to network is to show up at jam sessions. This, of course, was pre-COVID. But I would show up at these sessions and I noticed that there was this sort of elitism about it. I mean, the people holding it were expecting you to do certain things and know certain things. And I had somebody make a comment where they told me, oh, man, I want to go to your shows, but I don't think I'm smart enough for them.
Huh.
And that comment just broke my heart because that is not at all what jazz is about. It's not about academia and elitism and structure. I mean, it's just about people coming together to express themselves. So Half Step House was our attempt to, again, create that welcoming jam space. And at first, it was held in my living room in Germantown once a month in Louisville. But now that we have a practice space with a much larger space, we're going to start having it again now that things are a bit safer for us to gather. And just let musicians create freely without judgment, whatever that may be. Jazz, pop, completely improvised, we're here for it.
Well, what do you have in the works now?
We are currently working on some music videos, some visuals to supplement the music that you already have, as well as mixing the second part of Chrysalis, which will be called Monarch, EP number 2.
Well, of course, I found you on Spotify, but just so our listeners can find your music, where should they go? Besides Spotify, you're on like Bandcamp, that kind of thing?
We're not on Bandcamp, unfortunately. We are on all of the popular streaming services, Amazon Music, Apple Music, even the ones I've never heard of, like Deezer. If it streams, we're probably there. And then, of course, if you catch us at a show, we do have physical copies at our merch table.
All right. That's Kiana Dell of Kiana and the Sun Kings out of Louisville. We thank you so much, Kiana.
Thank you.
A big welcome to Crystal Jones, joining the Eastern Standard team of contributors and reporters. Crystal's out there with mic and recorder, talking to artists performing live at venues and festivals all around the region. Her first takes us back to summer and a day of music in the Red River Gorge.
I'm getting out of my car at the Festival of the Red back in June, and the music from the main stage immediately aligns with me. It's upbeat, bluesy, and the vocals are weathered and smooth with emotion, the perfect sound for this warm Kentucky afternoon and the smell of barbecue and bourbon on the breeze in this hidden valley in the Red River Gorge. I reach visibility of the stage. Cody Lee Meese has his guitar behind his head, his eyes are closed, and he's conjuring an eccentric solo as the crowd looks on. People use the word awesome too much, myself included, and at this moment, I am at a loss for words. Because this is actually awesome. I am in awe of Cody Lee's performance. His vintage pearl snap shirts, his boho jewelry, and the outlaw shades allude to an artistic archetype long upheld and adored by singer-songwriters in the same style of Cody Lee. A noticeably well-managed artist, his look, his presentation, his social media and stage presence is all his own, but all brilliantly held together by Hollerbilly management and his wife and friend, Carissa.
Thank God for LG Richardson, my manager, because he keeps me busy. Thank God for LG or even my wife, because I forget to get paid a lot of times because I just love it so much that I don't think about, I've always just done it because I love it.
Cody engages with his audience and band between songs and occasionally shares the story behind them.
It's myself, Aaron Boyd, and Sean Whiting.
He's charismatic as a frontman for the Poor Excuses. He envelops a copious amount of wisdom for his 30 years and performs without reservation.
I want to play for as many people as I can that maybe share some experiences I've shared and connect with people. That's the biggest thing to me is connecting with as many people as possible. You know, I don't judge anybody else for using the term fans, but I would rather consider people my friends than fans. Fans seems impersonal to me.
Cody Lee is one of those artists who is creatively expressive on stage and off. Festival of the Red was unforgettable, and Cody Lee and I passed half a dozen times backstage, and he was always friendly.
And I am heading out, and I have caught Cody Lee Meese at the gate.
Crystal, yeah.
See you, man. All have right. A good one. Be
Get
careful.
You down the road.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't get the chance to sit still together and talk until August at Bearded Man Music Festival. He is a frontman, and he is also a top-notch guitarist. And at Bearded Man, he's playing guitar for W.D. Miller. Meese is grateful and aware of the creative environment he is a part of.
I mean, the three of us, we've lived pretty much an entire lifetime before meeting each other. I used to be a mechanic, and that's what I did. You know, it's, in my family, you either drive a truck, go to prison, or work on cars.
Yeah.
And mechanicing seemed to be the one for me. But I started going into music and chasing the dream full time about 2.5 years ago. For the first time in my life this year, I played a festival on my own music. I'd never done that before. I've always played guitar for somebody else or just hung around. And so this year, it kicked off for me at Bones Tavern.
The former mechanic released his debut album called The Break, and it won Album of the Year at the Lexi Awards in 2020. Cody Lee's personal sound is composed of familiar tempos that flirt with folk rock and psychedelic blues rock in the form of slow dance heartbreak ballads like Bring Your Lovin' Back to Me and high-energy road trip tunes like Tongue Twister. Cody Lee's voice is pretty. There are a lot of synonyms for it, but the man has a pretty voice. It's smooth and well-aged, sure of its own feeling, but it placates with its gentle tones and enlightened melodies, like this part right here.
Yeah, when she asks you how I'm doing, yeah, go ahead and tell her that old truth, it's just the same. She thinks she's out of winning, I'm the one to lose.
I'm doing, just tell her the truth. Oh.
Some artists have a gift, and it takes a talent to make a song, but it takes a discerning mind and a shrewd study of human experience to turn a feeling into a sound.
We all have different gifts and skill sets that we're given. And I figure if I've been given the gift or the ability to write songs, then if I don't use a lot of the things I've been through to make a song out of so that it might touch someone else, then I'm doing it all for nothing.
Genres are useful because they define expectation of certain types of music. Cody Lee was more than I expected in this regard, and his sound is one that will slowly redefine the singer-songwriter genre, and that is the most outlaw thing a musician could do. For Eastern Standard, I'm Crystal Jones.
Still ahead after the break, Don Rogers, Jocelyn and the Sweet Compression, Kevin Holm Hudson, and Scott Whitten. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
This is Tom Musgrave with the Kentucky Arts Council. Coming up in Central and Eastern Kentucky Arts, the Lexington Philharmonic will present its concert Sorrow, Strength, and Love, 7:30 p.m. November 30th at the Lyric Theater and Cultural Arts Center. The concert will feature works by Lexington-born composer Julia Perry. For more information, visit lexphil.org. And Somerset's Flashback Theater Company will present a local production of All Together Now, a global event celebrating local theater, 7:30 p.m. November 13th and 2:30 p.m. November 14th at the Center for Rural Development. For more information and to order tickets, visit centertech.com. From the Kentucky Arts Council for Eastern Standard, I'm Tom Musgrave.
Eastern Standard continues with Tom Martin.
1, 2, 3,
We're back with four more Kentucky music profiles and a return to Lexington, home place of this awesome sound.
I've got luck. I've got luck on the double. Had a man and somehow ended up with another. If I don't make a choice, I'm choosing a world of trouble. You just can't be in luck on the double.
With us now is Jocelyn Hampton of Jocelyn and the Sweet Compression in Lexington. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, and you have a brand new album in the works, as I understand it, not yet released, so we're going to dip into your first record to get a sense of your sound. And as I understand it, this is all original music that you wrote with your stepdad, guitarist Marty Charters, right?
Correct, Marty Charters.
So who all is in the band?
So it's, of course, myself, Jocelyn. We have Marty Charters, which is our lead guitar player, and, of course, co-writer and arranger, or producer, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is Rashawn Fleming. He's our drummer. Stevie Holloman is our keyboard player. Smith Donaldson is our bass player. And then our horn section is Trevin Little on the saxophone and Chase Fleming on the trombone.
And I've been waiting for this opportunity to ask you, Jocelyn, how did you come up with that band name, The Sweet Compression?
Let me tell you, it was not an easy process. we kept coming up with name after name. We're like, oh, that's awesome. And then we look it up and it already existed for bands. Like, trying to come up with a band name in the, 2000 anything is extremely difficult because it's all been done. So, he was just kind of playing on his guitar and messing with his compressor. And he's like, Sweet Compression. And we're like, yeah.
Bad name. That's great. So are you, everybody's been knocked back on their feet by this pandemic. Are you guys getting out there? Are you doing any touring or playing in clubs or anything?
This year has been significantly better than last year because pretty much our whole season last year got completely destroyed. And it also set back our release for the album and also kind of prevented us from getting a deal, so we're back at square one. Not really square one, let me not say that because that's a lie, but we are not as far as we would be had we been able to continue through 2020.
Right. I think that's a pretty common story among artists right now.
Exactly. But this year has been great. We've been traveling quite a bit. And I'm grateful for being able to do that because some people never recovered, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to travel this year, we've been to Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. So we've been doing pretty good this year.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, I mentioned a new album that you've had in the works. When will that be released?
Hopefully we can get someone to pick it up and sign us with it. But if not, we plan to release it sometime, maybe around spring next year. If we have to self-release it, it'll be around that time.
And this was recorded in Lexington at Dwayne Lundy's studio. Is that right?
It was. It was another one from Dwayne. We love him and what he does. So we keep coming back.
All right. So where can we find you online?
JocelynandTheSweetCompression.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Jocelyn, which is JOSLYN and TSC.
All right, that's Jocelyn Hampton of Jocelyn and the Sweet Compression, and we now know how that name came about. Thank you so much, and good luck, Jocelyn.
Thank you so much.
The world keeps on changing. The world keeps on changing. World keeps on changing, yeah.
Earlier in the hour, I quoted from the liner notes of the latest album by Don Rogers, whose family was among the pioneers of Kentucky music. The history of the Rogers Family Band, later known as the Kentucky String Ticklers, and preserved by Don's father, Donnie, tells us how music got them through the challenges of the Great Depression and rough times. Joining us now is Don, grandson of one of the brothers in the family band, with an album titled The Tiny Thread That Ties Us All Together, offering us perspective and hope as our survival is once again at stake and we look for a way forward. Welcome, Don.
Hi. Nice to be here.
First, those liner notes by John Hare that I was just talking about. You must be really pleased with what he had to say.
I am. John is not only a good friend to me, but he's been a mentor to me, and I've gotten a lot out of his guidance, and he's always so good at wording things and explaining things involving all the rich sort of background that's necessary.
Yeah, I really urge people to check out those liner notes because it's like a little brief summary of Kentucky music. It's really interesting. We're going to listen to a sampling from this album in just a moment. But first, tell us why it's meaningful to you that it's been released by June Apple Records.
Well, June Apple Records is a record company that's been in my memory, in my life since I was a kid. I had a couple of records that had June Apple on them. And I remember as a kid looking at those records and thinking, that's interesting. Wonder what that even means. And as I got to know more about June Apple and realized that it's connected with the Apple Shop down in Whitesburg, Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
and that they've devoted really the whole existence of that organization to the preservation and continuation of great traditional music from Southern Appalachia. And then I've become more involved with some of the folks there at the Apple Shop. So when Brett Ratliff asked me if I would be interested, he heard one of the songs off of this record and before I recorded them, and he asked me if I would be interested in being a June Apple having my record on June Apple. I was very excited by that.
And Brett actually co-produced the album, right?
That's right, he did. And Brett and I have made music together for many years. We've been friends for a long time and played in a few bands together and produced. We were involved in organizing a music festival, old-time music festival up in Moorhead, and worked together on the Cowan Creek Mountain Music School down in Whitesburg and several other projects. So he's an old friend of mine, but he's devoted the last few years of his career to working for the Apple Shop and eventually taking over the operations of June Apple Records.
Okay, let's listen to a track from the album. We have picked out Songs We Sing, and I've queued up that second verse, which is really, really interesting. So here we go.
Well, it's lost highways and hearts of stone, freight trains that go on and on, the voices from the hills of home so bright. They rise up into harmonies, drift across the land and trees, taken in by all the leaves like sunlight. They seem to save us all somehow, like slaughtering the sacred cow. They keep us in the here and now forever. Through lives we live so pure and raw, they're with us when we rise and fall. The tiny thread that ties us all together, the songs we sing, seem to bring a little hope to it. And the songs we've sung, like roads they run through the souls of everyone.
So, Don, who joins you on this recording?
I'm joined by my old friend and music partner, Roddy Puckett, on bass. Roddy and I have made a lot of music together, going back to the days of the Green Jeans, and a rock band that played throughout the 90s and 2000s that Roddy and I started when we were very young. We really learned to play music together early on. And on fiddle, I have Blakely Berger, who is quite a bit younger than Roddy and I, and one of the very exciting, most exciting young traditional musicians around. She really is rich in all of the old traditional Kentucky fiddle music and progressive music styles as well. Just a great person. Blakely also sings harmony on this record with me, and I couldn't be happier with the way that it all sounds.
I was really glad to see Blakely there in your lineup. She was a regular at Lex Jam many, many, many years ago, a jam session we used to have here in Lexington. And at the time, all of us kind of winked and nodded and said, yep, we're going to be hearing from her in the future. So good going getting her on there.
Yeah, I also will say, Tom, that I can't leave out a mention for Kenny Miles, who really helped. He did the engineering on the record, and he and I talked through the concept of the record and lots of issues, and his talent and great ear were very much a part of it as well.
Well, back to those wonderful liner notes. In closing, John Herrod says about you and about this body of work, quote, "One cannot help but think of Tom T. Hall, whom we have recently lost. He and Don share the same big heart, the all-embracing compassion for the people who struggle, that is, all of us, and the sense of place that is Kentucky. Don and others like him are just passing it on down the line." Is that what you're doing? Are you serving as a messenger?
I think that's very well worded, yes. I have to agree that that's what's going on with me. I'm trying to make new music, you know, new fresh music, but music that is tied to place and respects place and context of people's just normal lives.
Okay, and where can we find the album?
Right now, it's streaming on all the major streaming platforms like Spotify, YouTube, Bandcamp. And we have some CDs in production that we should have in a few weeks. I will be playing down at Al's Bar on December 11th with Roddy Puckett and Blakely Berger, and Jesse Wells will be joining us for that session. And that will be our sort of rollouts, live performance. Hopefully we'll have some CDs by then as well.
Yeah, that'll be good. That's Don Rogers out with the album The Tiny Thread That Ties Us All Together on the June Apple record label. Thanks for joining us, Don.
Thank you, Tom.
A familiar face and name on the Lexington music scene has just released an album, Message from the Margins, by Dr. Kevin Holm Hudson and the Adjuncts. It's a collection of a dozen originals, and Kevin's here to tell us about it. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so what's the story behind this collection of songs?
Well, the roots of it come from a collaboration that I did last year with Scott Whitten and Jim Gleason as Archipelago. We did some ambient instrumental pieces during the pandemic lockdown. And at one point, Jim said to me, you know, if you ever want to make an album of your own stuff, just, you know, hit me up and let me know. And so I decided to take advantage of that. I've written about 100 songs at this point, going back several years. And so working with my band, The Adjuncts, I asked them which songs were their favorites, and so the track listing is basically a mix of some of my favorites with some of theirs.
I noticed that among your influences is Bruce Cockburn. You don't often see that, yet as a huge fan of Bruce Cockburn music, I certainly can understand why he would be, but tell us about his influence on your music.
I think it's the mysticism in his earlier work that really attracts me, and so some of my songs follow a similar bent of, you know, respect for nature, respect for the world. There's an element of politics in there as well. One song on the CD that kind of stands out from the others is Portrait of Casals, which was about Pablo Casals recording the Bach cello suites as the Spanish Civil War was going on and finishing his recording around the time that World War II broke out. So there's this kind of political darkness hiding in the background of that story.
Okay, we like to give our listeners a little sampling of the music, and another one that has captured our attention is Bullets in the Backyard. What's that all about?
Well, an old composer friend of mine once said that everything in my music is true and some of the things actually happened. And so in the case of Bullets in the Backyard, I was taking down the back wall of my garage, which had had some water damage over the years. And our drummer, David Chapman, was working with me on this project. We had just knocked down the wall and had a lot of splinters all over the place. So we were sifting through the dirt to basically try to get as much of the wood scraps as we could, and we came upon a cache of bullets that apparently had been buried in the soil for who knows how long, shotgun shells and bullets.
Whoa.
And so he took one of the shotgun shells over to the driveway, scraped off a little bit of the powder, took a match to it, and it sparked right up. We're just like, whoa. So this near disaster kind of led to the story. Pretty much everything in that song is something that actually happened.
Okay, let's listen to just a little bit.
Copper colored and glistening by the light of the moon. No one ever talks about the bullets in the backyard. Poor. Perhaps they were a souvenir from fighting overseas. Speculation comes with excavation by degrees. Perhaps they were for settling some neighborly dispute. The past is buried now, so the point is probably moot. Who knows what family secrets lie in the hearts of men? It's how they settle things. It was a different time back then. No one ever talks about the bullets in the backyard. No one ever talks about the bullets in the backyard.
Kevin, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are a familiar name and sound around town. How many local bands do you work with?
Well, for your listeners, I'm probably best known for the work that I did with the Twiggenburys. I played with them for almost 10 years. At the moment, I and with a project called Archipelago, which created some ambient instrumental music during the pandemic. That was a remote project with Jim Gleason and Scott Whitten. And I know you had covered that on Eastern Standard back when the first two volumes were released. We're working on a volume 3 at the moment, so that should be coming out before too long. I'm also in a band that is a acoustic classic rock group with an emphasis on three-part harmony. If you think about bands like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and that sort of sound, called Three Bird, and that's also with Jim Gleason, but joined by Thomas Hatton. And then finally, my own band, The Adjuncts, which just put out the CD. And Three Bird will be playing on November 19th at Elixir Downtown in Lexington, and The Adjuncts are going to be playing on November 27th at the Green Lantern, also in Lexington. So those are the next two band shows that we have coming up.
Does your work as a performer with local bands and as a recording artist, does that figure into the way that you teach music at the University of Kentucky?
Oh, it definitely does. Because in my teaching, I've always strove, or is that a word? Strove?
We'll take it.
Strive to incorporate popular music of different styles into my teaching. So it's not just, you know, the classical repertoire, but the students get contemporary examples as well. And I do draw my own experiences as a performer. To a certain extent, my teaching in music theory also integrates itself into the style of the songs that I write, you know, but in the way that I'll sort of self-consciously choose a particular harmonic progression, just because I like the way that it works within the structure of the song.
And I think you just sent us all down the Google rabbit hole to see if it's strove, striven, or strive. So where can we find the album?
It's currently available at CD Central. You can also get a digital album on Bandcamp. The address for that is kevin-holm-hudson.bandcamp.com. And I should point out that it's Holm like Stockholm, so it's Swedish, not English. There's no E in there. And I'm also going to be trying to get it available in other local sources in the next few weeks.
All right. Kevin Holm Hudson, professor of music at the University of Kentucky and leader of Kevin Holm Hudson and the Adjuncts. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you, Tom.
You find the darndest things just digging around the backyard of a shotgun shack on the edge of town. Some empty whiskey bottles and a broken G.I. Joe tell the tale of a family that lived here long ago. Secrets that are buried can come out into the light.
Lexington musician and Transylvania professor Scott Whitten is back with us. He performs with Letters of Acceptance, the Velvet Underground covers project Sister Ray, and the instrumental post-rock band Archipelago. Over the past several months, Scott's been releasing the Wire Act series, and he's here to tell us about this set of digital singles produced by Lexington's J. Tom Nato. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. It's always wonderful to hear your voice.
And so tell us about Wire Act. What you got going?
Wire Act is a series of singles that I began recording just before the pandemic began, and then over the past few months been working in a safe and sane manner with Tom Nato and other folks like Robbie Cosenza, and exploring some quieter songs. For a long time, I was playing louder music with bands like Palisades and The Wags. And I wanted to use this time to explore some quieter sounds, some different tones, and also to shed light on the work of a great nonprofit, Lexington, Kentucky's Habitat for Humanity chapter.
Okay, and we'll touch on that again in just a second. I want to give our listeners a sampling from one of your songs, and I take it this is something that's coming out soon, right?
Yes, in just a few days. This song was called Say Goodnight, Gracie, and it features the wonderful backing vocals of Emily Waxahara.
Say goodnight, Gracie, we both could use some sleep. Black and white, late night classic movies on TV. With my hesitation and your different colored eyes, maybe I should play it straight and time the punchline right. Say goodnight, Gracie. You hide your scars so well. Scars can tell fortune. A fortune never tells. I used to dream of drowning off the California coast. But no one ever gets the joke. No one needs to know.
And where do we go online to find Wire Act?
The easiest place to find the Wire Act series is at adoreforadesk.bandcamp.com. But you can also look up my name under Spotify or Apple Music or other platforms, and you'll find the complete series there.
Am I right that 50% of the proceeds from the Bandcamp sales of this album, of this work, support the work of Lexington Habitat for Humanity?
Yes, sir, and it's an honor to partner with them on this project. I've done a number of promotional and fundraising events over the years as a Lexingtonian to serve Habitat for Humanity. I kind of grew up on Habitat build sites. My dad was the head of Habitat for Humanity in South Carolina for about a decade in the upstate. He was a construction manager and a project estimator. And I learned at a very young age the power of that organization, the way that it fights for housing justice, the way that it supports various people in terms of home ownership and home repair. And I can't say enough good things about the folks at Habitat.
Well, very cool that you build music to help build homes.
Exactly. That's exactly how I put it.
That's Lexington musician Scott Whidden filling us in on his latest project, Wire Act. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Tom.
That wraps up this week's edition. We hope you've enjoyed this hour. Eastern Standard is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions. Mike Savage is our executive producer, Wendy Barnett our producer, Neil Kesterson, producing engineer and audio editor, Ella Fitzgerald Dean, studio dog. You can find us online at weku.org or esweku.org, on the WEKU mobile app, and on NPR One, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Want to suggest a topic? Drop us a line at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.